you trying to pivot into or advance your career in the growing field of learning and development and struggling to envision your next role? Me too. I got your back. In this space, we'll be conducting job analysis style interviews with folks holding L&D and L&D adjacent roles in order for us to better clarify, classify, and envision the type of L&D work we want to do next. So come along this journey with me. I can't wait to survey the L&D landscape with you. Hey there, I'm your host, Abigail Wheeler Charlu, and in today's episode, episode 48 of the Surveying the L&D Landscape podcast, I sit down with Joseph Diaz to analyze his role as a sales enablement coordinator. Joseph is an instructional designer with strong skills in project management, user experience and user interface design, and sales enablement. A former Spanish and Portuguese tutor, Joseph holds a master's degree in instructional psychology and technology. During our conversation, we dive into the L&D adjacent world of sales enablement, how he gets to have a seat at the table and consult stakeholders on issues and potential training solutions, why knowledge management is critical to his approach as he strives to make resources and tools easy to find and easy to apply, and so much more. I had a great time chatting with Joseph. He has many great insights to share, and especially for those of you earlier in your career, he's a great role model, someone you can really connect with and learn from. Let's dive in. Hi, Joseph. Welcome to the Surveying the L&D Landscape podcast.
Hey, how's it going, Abby?
Good. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm really excited to chat with you today. You have a super unique role, which is important to the landscape. So let's dive into it.
Awesome. Let's do it.
What job are we analyzing?
So I work right now as a sales enablement coordinator, which has been a lot of fun. It sounds kind of ambiguous, and it intentionally is, because my role kind of incorporates a lot of different responsibilities. And the part that really drew me most to the role is the instructional design, learning and development aspect of it. But it's been a lot of fun kind of getting to explore this role, even myself. So it's something I'm still figuring out and surveying.
Yeah, that's great. What previous experience have you held that prepared you for this kind of work?
So prior to getting into learning and development and instructional design, I actually worked as a Spanish tutor. I worked with church representatives from the ages of 18 all the way to 80, helping people learn to speak Spanish for service opportunities, which was a ton of fun. And I really, really loved that experience. And one of my mentors at the time was also studying instructional design. He was in a master's program. And so he recommended that experience to me when we were talking. And he said, you know, I think you would really enjoy this field of instructional design. And so that was when I really started trying to pivot from traditional teaching to getting into this instructional design field. So I worked for a year at a startup as a project manager. And then I also did an internship for the second year of my master's program, where I worked as an instructional designer, working with more senior representatives and helping them learn how to use technology. So how to use an LMS, how to use Zoom, how to use just different software and technology that they needed every day for their work. And I loved helping them understand how to use resources, tools, and just work more effectively. And then transitioned into my current role now. So
awesome. That's such a great career trajectory. I love that you kind of followed your passion, maybe out of undergrad, and then have been able to really craft a career intentionally. And looks like you're doing a great job navigating the L&D landscape.
Thank you. Definitely figuring it out as I go, but it's a lot of fun getting to talk with other people in this field and understand what are the skills and responsibilities that they have. How can I improve myself and develop in my own role?
Absolutely. That's what it's all about. I love it. Where would you say your job lands within the landscape of learning and development?
That's an awesome question. And since I knew you were going to ask it, I actually tried to do some research a little bit to see what the overlap is between enablement and learning and development. And what was interesting was, from the internet's perspective, they're two separate fields with very similar aims, which was really fascinating to me. So there was a lot of overlap, kind of a Venn diagram of instructional design on one side, sales enablement on the other. And that overlap in the middle was helping people learn and improve in their role. but the focuses seemed to be different as far as the internet definition went. I was curious to see enablement being categorized as separate from learning and development, because it's felt very similar to me having an instructional design background and then working in the space.
Yeah, I so appreciate you going and doing some of that research in advance. You know, this is a hard question, and questions just depend on who you ask and their experience. But it's interesting, if you define L&D as instructional design, then perhaps sales enablement is separate, right? But if you define L&D as larger than instructional design, then it could be inclusive of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting exactly how you said, the way we use so much language and terminology in learning and development is different from industry to industry, and even from one job to another, that what someone as an instructional designer, air quotes, does at one company could be totally different from an instructional designer at another company. And I've seen in some circumstances, my role that's a sales enablement coordinator is very similar to what someone's doing in a traditional instructional design role at another job, or even in other departments at my same company.
Yeah, so good. This is it, right? This is why it makes it so difficult to navigate this field, because there are all these different terminologies and ways of understanding something. And it is different at different companies and even in different departments. And that's okay, but we need to have a kind of clear understanding of what these things are so we can better navigate them.
Absolutely.
Can you tell me a bit about your organization? What is the business? What is it serving? And how are you building learning or enablement opportunities that is supporting the business functions?
Yeah, I work at a company called Vivint, and Vivint offers smart home and security equipment. So we have things like cameras and sensors, smart home products like smart thermostats, smart door locks. And I work with the technicians specifically. So the part of the organization I work with is called field operations, and it's the smart home technicians that go out and do the installation professionally of these systems. So a customer might design a system that they want with the equipment that they need, and then these technicians come on site and then they actually install the system for the homeowner. And so the training that I work with from the sales enablement perspective is helping these technicians understand our different products, their features, their benefits, so that they can speak in an educated way with the customers about the value that they're getting out of their system when they're in their home, help answer questions, resolve issues. Maybe they're on a service ticket and they're working with a customer that's had problems with their system, or they're not satisfied with the value that they're getting. And so I focus a lot on that aspect of the product education for these technicians, and then also other opportunities. So understanding aspects of upsell, our partner offerings. We work with solar and we work with insurance. And so helping them understand the value. I think one of the ways I've seen a lot of similarity to my previous work is it feels like you have to learn a language. You have to learn to talk about the business and the products, and then not only understand the business side of it and our products and their features, but you have to be able to translate that to benefits and talk about it in the language of the customer who's focused on what's the value that I'm getting out of this. And so as we create learning experiences for new products or for existing products to address gaps in performance, it's a lot of fun for me getting to work with some of our top performers who oftentimes serve as my subject matter experts and understand, how do you talk about these offerings? How do you handle these difficult interactions and conversations? And then try and translate that into a process that can be learned by somebody else that maybe doesn't have the same background professionally, or maybe that doesn't have the same skills. If they're introverted and they don't feel comfortable in these face-to-face scenarios, they maybe are more comfortable with the installation portion of their job. How do we help them learn these soft skills of selling and asking questions, understanding needs from customers? And so it's been a lot of fun for me to also learn the language of the business and then help these technicians learn to speak that same language as well.
That's great. Thank you for that description. So this role of sales enablement, it's like sales training, essentially. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, absolutely. Because we need our technicians to understand how to sell not only our products in the home, but our other offerings, how to help our customers understand our referral program, how to understand our partner channels and how they could benefit from those offerings. And so absolutely, they're learning how to sell. And then they have to learn those skills on top of the fact that they're also doing manual labor, installing systems in the customer's home. So there's kind of the two-sided aspect of what they're trying to learn on the job.
Right. So the sales of the product, the education of the product itself, and then maybe supporting any type of like technical skills or things that they need in the field to just do their work.
Exactly.
Do you get pretty technical into the technician side of it, or is it more on the power soft skills, selling product features aspect?
Yeah, but that's a really good question. In my experience, I've dealt mainly with the revenue and the selling and the soft skills, and I have had some exposure to the technical side, but we actually have a separate team of team trainers that they cover the technical aspect of what are the protective equipment that you should be using and job safety, making sure they understand how to do wiring for a thermostat, how does an HVAC work, all of those other technical aspects. I actually went through that training, and that was really helpful for me to understand the cognitive load that is on our learners when we're asking them to also focus on these soft skills and the selling aspect. Is they have a lot going on, because not only are they trying to maybe sell some additional products or talk about our partner channels, but at the same time, they're worrying about how do I drill into this person's home to install an outdoor camera, or I'm very new to this and I don't understand how to do this installation. And so they're definitely working on figuring out both parts at the same time. So while I don't teach and I don't create as much training on that technical side, I've had to be aware of it because it's something that is congruently happening as they perform their job with the resources that I'm hoping they learn as well.
Right. It may not be something you have to know going into the role, but helpful for you, like you said, to connect with your learners, your audience, to understand their cognitive load. That's great awareness.
Oh yeah. It gave me a lot of empathy for my learners when I went through the same training that they went through and seeing how much they had to understand and had to remember on site. And then as I went out, I actually got to shadow some of our technicians, and I got to see that cognitive load that they're under, that you're in a customer's home and you've got your tool belt on you, you've got your products in your truck, you're worrying about how am I going to do this install? And then at the same time, you're focusing on the sales portion. So it gave me a lot of empathy for sure.
Good stuff. I cannot emphasize enough the importance of being able to shadow your audience and their role to actually understand the work that they do, especially if you're going to train them on the specific aspects of their job or how to improve a certain part of their job, aka selling, right? In this case.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself. That was perfect.
Good. So where do you sit within the organization? Who do you report to? What does your team look like?
Yeah. So within Vivint, there are a couple of different channels. There's the direct to home, which has our door-to-door sellers, and then they have direct to home installers that work with them, especially during the summertime where those sellers are really busy. And then they have installers that work with them. And then we also have our inside sales team. And then our inside sales team has full-time technicians that work year-round to go and install those systems that are being sold. And so the organization that I'm a part of is field operations. So focusing specifically on those technicians, I get to work with some of those direct-to-home summer technicians that are going out and working really long days during the summer. And then also some of those full-time technicians who work year-round. And then I report to the senior manager of enablement. And so within field operations, we get to work with different teams like communications to understand what's the information that our technicians need to do well in their job, and how can we make sure they have the tools, the information and resources that they need to not only do their job, but to do it well and to improve and to help meet business goals.
Yeah, that's great. So you report into the operation function. How many people are in your team?
On my team right now, there are 4 of us.
Okay. And who do you report to directly?
So my direct manager is the senior manager of enablement. And then we have some other revenue managers and enablement coordinators who have different responsibilities and different backgrounds. One of my coworkers has more of a technical background in software, project management, and he does a lot of our help on the technical side, whether that's creating tools, organizing resources. And then another coworker who is also in a lot of ways a subject matter expert because he's been with the company for a long time. He has a great understanding and he's worked as a trainer for a lot of years as well. He's worked as a trainer and a manager. And so he brings his expertise and we all kind of support each other with our different expertise. our different backgrounds to help create these learning and training resources.
That's awesome. And I think what's a distinctive piece here is that not all L&D jobs, if we categorize them as L&D jobs, right? Not all report up to the HR function. It typically depends on who your audience is. In this case, they're technicians, and that is still employees, but the work is more operational in nature. So I think that it makes sense that it's sitting under the operations function. Sometimes L&D jobs sit under the sales or marketing or communications function if they're working with the customer directly. So it kind of just depends the nature of the work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a great point that the organization isn't always as linear as we might expect it to be, because I report under enablement, and then we have those trainers that focus on the technical side, and they also are in the same field operations organization, but then they also do not report under HR. However, all of us still will collaborate on occasion with the learning and development team, with those instructional designers that do report under HR when we have initiatives that are maybe company-wide, or if it's something that is going to be an e-learning module to be created and uploaded to the learning management system, then we have a lot of collaboration with them. And so I get to work with them, but it is interesting, like you described, how I'm still doing these kind of learning and development responsibilities without being in that linear reporting structure of human resources or whatever might be more traditional.
Yeah, absolutely. If you had to divide your typical day or week into a series of major categories or buckets of activities, how would you define those?
I would say my major buckets go into actually delivering training and then collaborating with stakeholders and subject matter experts, and then time spent actually creating resources. And so on Wednesdays, for example, we spend a lot of time delivering new hire training and working face-to-face with our learners. And so that's really great for me because I love getting to interact with my learners and hear from them what their experience is like doing their job, what resources they are or aren't using, and what they wish they had. And then another bucket is that collaborating with stakeholders and subject matter experts. And so I'll talk with leaders in our department to understand, as they're looking at the big picture, they're looking at the performance of the organization, what are the needs that they see, and what are the goals and objectives that they want to meet? And then working with those subject matter experts to say, how can we distill our top performers and their skills and make it something that everybody can do? And so that's some of my time. And then lastly, the time I get to actually spend developing and creating and putting pen to paper and making the resources, making the tools. So maybe we hear a need from our field of, I really wish I had this resource, or our leadership, even from the top down, says it looks like we're struggling in this performance area, for example, and then figuring out, so what is the tool or what is the information that needs to be gathered or created so that we can then disperse that to our technicians and help them have what they need.
Yep. So good. And even these buckets of activities that you've described are pretty squarely typical L&D activities, right?
Absolutely.
I'm curious about the coordinator aspect of your title. Does that inform specific activities or responsibilities that you have? And how does that relate to the other folks that are on your team?
Great question. My manager put it in a way that was really impactful just a few weeks ago, even, was he talked about how, as the sales enablement coordinator, he sees my role as one that is more consultative, which is something that was really exciting for me to hear. I think oftentimes in L&D, we hear people frustrated with being in an order-taking role where you're constantly being told, we need this training created, or we need this to be made, and then we just take that order and run with it. And as a sales enablement coordinator, I think I'm very privileged to also sometimes be able to have a seat at the table and make expert recommendations and ask questions and maybe push back a little bit when we have a training need or a perceived training need, to talk about what is the real problem here and what could be a potential solution. Maybe it's addressing issues with the culture. Maybe it's actually just addressing accessibility to resources, or maybe we actually do need to go out and create training and deliver it. But I really love getting to coordinate with our different stakeholders and leaders and have those conversations with them about what are the business goals we're trying to achieve and what do we need to create or deliver or to enable our technicians to meet those goals.
That's a great way to think about it. I love that for you. You described the other folks on your team, maybe the roles that they take. What's their specific titles?
So the two other team members that report to my same manager, they are called field revenue managers. And essentially what that means is they are in charge of helping manage the revenue performance of our technicians. So understanding what areas they might be struggling in, whether that's upsell or whether that's our partner offerings, and understanding that revenue performance or that revenue gap, and then kind of addressing that need, whether that be through creating tools, creating resources, or creating training.
So it sounds like maybe as managers, they're kind of owning specific domains and getting to be more of the program owners of those things. Whereas as the coordinator, you get to almost sit with the senior manager of enablement and really support and kind of go back and forth between those SMEs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you said it perfectly that they oftentimes are managing programs and structure in that way. And I think in a lot of ways, I get to manage products or learning experiences or resources in a way that helps build and support the programs that our field revenue managers are creating and supporting.
Yeah, good. Sometimes I think, at least I'll speak for myself, the term coordinator is like, you have to it's a lot of scheduling and administrative work. That's probably a piece of it as well. But I love that you get to kind of sit above those things and get a seat at the table and have a consultative approach to how you work with others.
Yeah, absolutely. There's could be a connotation with that term coordinator that says I'm just doing administrator work or focusing on the back end of things. But that hasn't entirely been the case. I've been really grateful that the skills that I get to exercise of collaborating with subject matter experts and doing a needs analysis, designing, developing resources is something that I just really love and I have a lot of fun with. And so I'm glad that while the title coordinator might connotate different responsibilities, what I actually get to do day to day at work is just something that I really love.
Good stuff. I love that. Is this your first kind of quote unquote official L&D role?
I would say so, yeah, because prior to this, I worked as an intern instructional designer for an organization called BYU Pathway. And so BYU Pathway is kind of higher ed, and I worked with service representatives that were helping support that initiative. And so while it was an L&D role, it was just an internship, and I didn't have as much opportunity to interface directly with stakeholders. I spent a lot more time listening to what my manager needed and then just carrying out those tasks. So yeah, I would say this has really been my first full-time real role where I get to kind of craft my responsibilities, see my job evolve and grow into something more beyond just what my job description is.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that career trajectory and the path that you're on.
Thank you.
If you had to pick one of those buckets that we just talked about, I know we talked about them a while ago now, but dive even further into the specific activities involved in performing that bucket, could you outline those for us?
Yeah, I would say probably one of the buckets, which is working with stakeholders and subject matter experts, is one that I get a lot of fulfillment performing, because part of that is sitting in on meetings where I get to listen to how things are going at the company, what are our objectives, what are we working towards, and what might be some perceived gaps in maybe performance or understanding. And then as I meet with subject matter experts to talk about those challenges that we're trying to address, understanding what information or skills or tools a high performer would use or need or should have, and then trying to systematize that. It's really cool getting to have this kind of brain dump session with our subject matter expert and say, tell me everything you know about this topic. I need to understand it at least to a degree where I can start to sift through and organize and identify actionable items that we can distill throughout our organization. And so there's those meetings with the stakeholders that I get to sit in on, and I'm learning and I'm taking notes and trying to understand. And then again, meeting with the subject matter expert, trying to understand in greater depth, greater detail, and kind of parse through and figuring out what are the key elements of this topic that need to be communicated to our field, and then figuring out how are we going to do that? This is something that needs to just be communicated, and we need to be working with our communications team to spread information and just make resources accessible and more widely available? Or do I need to work with our instructional design team and create a learning program? Do we need to create e-learning? Do we need to organize webinars and get trainers and people to facilitate this content? Or is this something that needs to be self-directed? Is this self-directed learning that our technicians are going to go through on their own, that we're going to give them the tools and they're going to educate themselves? And then what are the pros and cons of each of those delivery methods? And so I think the strategic aspect of that role, or that part of the role, is something that I really love.
Yeah, fantastic. And that's that opportunity where you get to be a strategic partner with those SMEs that you're working with. And this morning, I just listened to Andy Soch's Talent Development Think Tank podcast. Let me pull up the person that he interviewed. His episode with Candace Mitchell. This topic of being a strategic business partner is really popular in our fields right now, right? For good reason. But she said something a little bit different. She said, you know, there are times when we do need to just be the order taker because we need to, you know, show our partnership and demonstrate and build that trust. So I'm just curious, from your experience, like, to what extent do you feel like when you're having these conversations, you just need to sometimes do the thing that they're asking? Or how can you like finesse it in a way that's, you know, is more so meeting the need, earning it to over time be someone that they can come to and you can really advise on?
What you said actually goes along with something I've been studying and reading about lately. Is I've been reading Keith Keating's The Trusted Learning Advisor. And it's so true that this shift from being order takers to consultative learning advisors, it doesn't happen overnight. And so I think sometimes, exactly as you described, we do just have to take the order. And I think a big part of it does depend on the urgency. If this is something that needs to be done within 1 week or 2 weeks, and we have a really quick turnaround, I've found that those just aren't great opportunities to step in and try and push back and say, no, I want to be a trusted learning advisor. I want to consult. Sometimes there just really isn't time or bandwidth, and that would absolutely damage the relationship that I have with stakeholders if I were to do that. And so what I found helps in those scenarios is still taking the order and then looking for opportunities to either maybe create more opportunity down the road of how could we improve this program, or how could we improve this experience? What does version two of this look like? Mm-hmm. And what are the changes that I wish I could make so that when we do eventually come back and revisit this project, what are the recommendations I'd like to make down the road? And what are the data points that I need to start gathering now, so that when I make those recommendations, I have data and information to back up those points? So I'll take the order today, but I really want to pay attention to what is the outcome of that order, so that down the road we can talk about it in a strategic way. And then I have valuable insights to offer. And then hopefully that way I'm still able to meet the needs, fill that order, and really respect and honor what my stakeholders need in the moment, while also still setting myself up for success, maybe at a later date, whether that's 3 months or 6 months down the road.
Yep. So good. Couldn't agree more. And in fact, I've interviewed Dr. Keith Keating on this podcast. I highly recommend the folks go back and take a listen to his episode as CLO.
Awesome. Yeah, I haven't heard that one, so I will definitely be going back myself and giving that episode a listen. That sounds great.
Good stuff. What would you say are the most critical skills, abilities, and personal characteristics required for the work that you do?
The two skills and characteristics that come top of mind, I would say the first one has been project management for me. I think prior to breaking into my first traditional L&D role, I did work as a project manager for a year, and I really learned a lot about understanding the scope of a project, understanding timelines, understanding budget and constraints, and organizing resources to make sure deliverables get finished on time and in a quality manner. And in my current role, that's something that I'm using all the time. It's been really helpful to have that background so that when I go into Asana and I'm organizing and looking at what are the initiatives we're working on, who are the stakeholders involved, what information needs to be communicated, do we need to have an update on this project, is this getting left behind and forgotten about, and managing my project, managing my own personal time, and then being able to manage relationships with our subject matter experts and the other people involved in projects. I found that that has just been an invaluable skill. And I think with that, having the ability to work with stakeholders and subject matter experts, those people skills of being able to listen, to understand needs, to verify understanding, make sure that you know what your stakeholder is communicating to you, and not just negating that, because maybe we're being given an order like you described, and we feel like, oh, this isn't the right solution, this isn't what we should be creating, or this isn't the way we should be teaching people. And we still need to have that empathy. We still need to listen and validate and say, I definitely hear what the problem is you're trying to address, and I want to be a part of the solution. I want to help you find that solution that you're looking for. So I think those skills of being able to collaborate with SMEs, manage those relationships, work with stakeholders, build that trust is also a really important skill that I think would serve anyone in any part of learning and development.
Absolutely. Those are great skills to highlight. Thank you. Could you describe one project that you're working on or have worked on in your role that you felt was impactful and what you learned from it?
Yeah, I would say one project that I'm currently working on and have worked on a lot is actually, I would say it's a curation of resources for our technicians. I took some time to do a needs analysis because we were creating lots of trainings and webinars, and I wanted to see if I could find more about the root cause of what is stopping people from improving their performance and getting better. Is there anything we could do besides scheduling a training call and getting them on a webinar with us? And I started to reach out to a bunch of our technicians and just ask them, what resources do you wish you had? What would help you be more successful? And I found that because resources were scattered across so many different platforms, and some of them even behind single sign-ins that you had to log in to access the resources, that was a big challenge, was just accessibility to resources and also partners. If they needed to reach out to my team, they didn't know the best way to reach out to us. Or if they needed to reach out to another department, they didn't know the best way to contact us. And so it wasn't necessarily an issue of knowledge, but just being able to locate the resources that they wanted. And so we've been working to just better curate and organize all of our resources into one place. And that's been a really meaningful effort as well, as that project has come together and as we continue to work on it. I'm always impressed at how much our learners benefit when not only do we create good resources and content for them, but we make it accessible and easy to find, because that's something that we don't always think about. Maybe we create the most amazing one-page resource about a product that if you just read this one page, you would be an expert salesman and you would do great. But if you can never find it and you don't know where it is and you don't know how to reference it again, you're not going to be able to learn that. And so making sure that we know where our content is, and not only that we know where our content is, but do our learners know how to find that information? Do they know how to find those tools and resources? That's been a project that I've really loved working on right now.
Yeah, so good. This is so true. Knowledge management is such a huge piece of the work that we do that sometimes we forget about, right? Referencing another podcast I listened to recently, Jess Omley's new podcast, L&D Must Change. She recently had an episode with JD Dillon, who his episode was published last week on our podcast, but they're talking about our systems being separated from each other. Have all of these systems to look at in an organization oftentimes, and their learning management system might not be connected with the HR system or something that they have to access every day. And so that it presents a challenge for us is if we really think about it, what is the ecosystem in which our learning materials are living in and how accessible are they to our learners? We can create all of the resources, all of the best materials in the world, but if our audience can't access them, they're useless, right?
Absolutely. That's spot on. And I think knowledge management has been a piece that has been really new to me in this role, because in my previous role, everything was in one place on one SharePoint site. And so everybody knew if they needed something, they went to the SharePoint site. And I found in this new role, that hasn't always been the case. There is a SharePoint site, for example, but then what about another site and another page and another document and another tool? And yeah, when it's all over the place, it can be overwhelming for learners. And worst case scenario, maybe they give up on trying to use those resources and they just focus on, I just need to do my job and I don't want to add to that load. I want to make my resources and tools and learnings easy to find and easy to apply so that they can just make it a natural part of their workflow. Like you said, put it where they already are. Where are they already spending their time?
Yeah, so good. How would you say you're evaluated on how well you perform your role?
That's a great question. I would say a big part of how I'm evaluated in my current role deals with the products or programs that I'm helping to manage. So one aspect of that is this new hire training and my contributions to delivering webinars, evaluating the material that we're training on, updating it as needed, making sure we're compliant with different policies within the company and updating as those change. And then on top of that, some of these products or programs that I'm helping create with our other team members, whether that's an initiative to build a new tool for our technicians or update an existing resource or just to help improve access to knowledge like this knowledge management that we were just talking about. I really, in my one-on-ones with my manager, we talk a lot about how are those programs or products performing and what are my contributions? What am I doing to keep that project organized? What am I doing to make sure that we're getting things done on time and that the value is really being delivered? And then is it actually impacting field performance? Are we helping them do their job better than they were doing it the day before?
Totally. What are you doing? How is it performing? What's your unique contribution? Are there any specific metrics that you and your supervisor use to kind of be objective about it, or is it possible?
That's a great question. And with the timing, that's actually one of my current projects I'm tackling right now is understanding the data. It's something that I haven't had as much experience with. And so right now I'm really just trying to dive deep into understanding how can I look at performance data and tie that correlation to the work I do. So I would say right now there's not as much objectivity. And that's something that I'm working to change because I really want to be able to see that for myself as well, to be able to see what efforts are bringing the greatest results and where should I really focus my time and efforts as we're trying to be more consultative in the support that we're providing.
Yeah, that's a great thing to do both for your organization, but also for you personally, right? Because then it's a lot easier for you to write on your resume exactly what you did, how you did it, and the impact that you had with data, which is not always easy to do, right? Like, I built all these great resources. That's what I did.
Yeah, spot on. And that's exactly what I'm working on right now. That's a skill that I'm trying to pick up as we speak. That is something I'm working on right now, real time. And so if we were to talk 6 months down the road, hopefully I'll be in a new spot where I'll say, hey, I've learned so much about data and I'm really working to draw those lines and tell that story. And that's a skill that I'm working on right now.
Well, same. And so maybe we can circle back to it in about
that sounds great.
Love it. Are there any final specific technical skills, experience, knowledge areas, or educational background required for not just effective performance, but exceptional performance in your role?
I think that I learned this in my master's program when we talked about instructional technology. Is there are just so many resources as far as project management resources, e-learning, learning management systems, knowledge management systems, and content management. There's so much technology. And I think it might seem impossible and maybe daunting trying to learn it all, but I think it is still important to just familiarize yourself with the tools and resources that are being created and that exist so that depending on where you land, you have that background and those skills to adapt. Maybe from one job to another, you use a different learning management system or a different authoring tool, but understanding kind of the fundamentals is going to be an evergreen skill. And same for project management. If you've used Monday.com, you can probably figure out Asana, or you can figure out Jira, or you can figure out Trello. And so I think taking the time to learn those technologies, those learning technologies and tools, whether that be learning management systems, e-learning tools, authoring tools, or other technological resources, really taking the time to familiarize yourself with those is going to be an evergreen skill that will serve you in essentially any role.
Completely. I 100% agree with this. Every organization is different. There's going to be new technology and new systems and new things that you have to learn. But if you have some of those baseline experiences and skills, it's easy to showcase that and talk about it and quickly get in and learn the other thing is you're adapting to the organization, right?
Spot on. That's exactly right.
Good stuff. Joseph, it has been such a pleasure to connect with you today. I am really pleasantly surprised by this conversation. It's been, you know, so enlightening. I love the approach that you're taking to your work. You're doing incredible work, and I can't wait to see your career just continue to explode from here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and thank you so much for your insightful questions. It's really a great practice for even me to think about what am I doing? What am I learning? What are the takeaways? And just reflect so that I can also continue to grow and learn. So thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. As we wrap the conversation up, I have a few rapid fire questions for us to run through.
Okay.
How do you continue to develop yourself professionally within your role?
I would say one of my favorite tools has honestly been LinkedIn. By just checking and spending a few minutes a day on LinkedIn and connecting with professionals in the learning and development space, it's been so helpful for me to just be aware of what's going on beyond the little bubble of work that I'm doing right now today and see, wow, there are so many brilliant people out there and there's just so much I can learn from them. And so following those people, engaging in conversation with them, commenting on their content, chatting with them, getting to meet them has just really been one of my favorite ways to develop professionally, just getting those other perspectives beyond my own organization.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, we met through LinkedIn because you've been following Stephen Mostrom and you commented on his post of him appearing on the podcast. And that's how I was able to connect with you. And, you know, I was intrigued by you and the work that you're doing and able to get you on the podcast, and you quickly hopped on.
Yeah, it's a great way to connect with just lots of fun and brilliant people. So I would recommend that for anybody, that you, whether it's just spending a few minutes a day following new people and commenting on their content, you'll make so many great connections if you really just jump into it. The learning and development space is just full of amazing people that are just so kind.
Completely. How would you describe the current landscape of learning and development? And what do you think is on the horizon?
I think this idea that we talked about of becoming a trusted learning advisor and this shift from being reactive order takers to proactive consultants is a really big shift that I think is on the horizon. And it's something that I'm really excited to see and be a part of. I want to myself be in one of those positions where I become more and more of a trusted learning advisor. And I want to see lots and lots of other people who have that same desire be able to achieve that and be able to make that shift from being an order taker to getting to really take those skills and that knowledge that they have about learning and instructional design or learning and development and just apply that in a consultative role. I think that's just powerful and it's exciting.
Completely. As we come to a close, what's one piece of advice that you'd like to share with folks as they're trying to pivot into or navigate their career within the L&D landscape?
I would say take time to network with people that are just a little bit ahead of you and maybe even a lot of bit ahead of you in their career, and take the time to talk with them and hear their story and ask questions. Because even just a 30-minute coffee chat with somebody who is maybe 1 or 2 years ahead of you in their career can really be enlightening to get ideas for how do I want to pivot? What are the skills I should focus on? Who are the connections I should make? What are the different resources that I need to look into? Are there books I should be reading? Are there courses I should be taking? And if you just take a few minutes each week, whether that be one coffee chat a week and take 30 minutes to meet somebody new, or even just once a month, depending on what your bandwidth is, I think those conversations are invaluable. And so I would just really encourage everybody to take that time to network, meet people, and have those conversations, because it really helps you just get a much broader perspective of the field and understand the L&D landscape in a broader way.
100%. I couldn't agree more. Such great advice. Really impressed and proud of you, the work you're doing and where you're going, and you're really ahead of the game in many ways in your career journey. So I'm just grateful to be a part of this conversation with you today.
Thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure getting to chat with you as well, Abby.
If you found value in today's episode, please rate, review, or subscribe to the podcast. I'd be so grateful. I'll see you next week as we survey our next job in the L&D landscape.